Samuel chapter 23. Starting in verse 19 through the end of the chapter. I don't think this message will be long tonight. I would guess maybe 30 minutes. But we are going to finish this chapter up here today at this portion of David's life. But first Samuel chapter 23, and we're going to start in verse 19. Then came up the Ziphites to Saul to Gibeah, saying, "Doth not David hide himself with us in strongholds in the wood and in the hill of Hachaliah, which is on the south of Jezimon? Now, therefore, O king, come down according to all the desire of thy soul to come down, and our part shall be to deliver him into thy hand." And Saul said, "Blessed be of the Lord, for you have compassion on me. Go, I pray you, and prepare yet, and know and see his place where his haunt is, and who hath seen him there, for it is told me that he dealeth very subtly. See, therefore, and take knowledge of all the lurking places where he hideth himself, and come ye again to me with the certainty, and I will go with you, and it shall come to pass, if he be in the land, that I will search him out throughout all the thousands of Judah." And they arose and went as if before Saul, but David and his men were in the wilderness of Maon, and the plain of the south of Jezimon. Now Saul and his men went to seek him, and they told David whither he came down into a rock and abode in the wilderness of Maon. And when Saul heard that, he pursued after David in the wilderness of Maon. And Saul went on this side of the mountain, and David and his men on that side of the mountain. And David made haste to get away for fear of Saul. For Saul and his men compassed David and his men round about to take them. But there came a messenger unto Saul, saying, "Haste thee and come, for the Philistines have invaded the land." Wherefore Saul returned from pursuing after David and went against the Philistines. Therefore they called that place Selah Hamalekath. And David went up from thence, and dwelt in the stronghold at En-Gedi. Let's go ahead and pray. Father in heaven, Lord, I love you. Lord, I ask your blessing upon the message tonight. I pray that you'd work, Father. Please fill me with your Spirit. Please control what I say, Lord, and how I say it. I ask for your blessing and your help. Please change our lives tonight. Draw us closer to you, Lord. I love you. I pray this in Christ's name. Amen. Now, as we've already seen as we began to enter into this chapter, David is now again starting to act like a king. He was getting backslidden, making wrong decisions, not seeking the Lord, not trusting the Lord. Just the opposite of the man that we were introduced to all the way back in 1 Samuel chapter 17 when he fought Goliath. But again, that is changing now. He's making decisions. He's seeking the Lord. His trust is increasing in God. And last Sunday? Yeah, I believe it was last Sunday. No, two Sundays ago now is last time that I was here on a Sunday, two Sundays ago, we looked at where Jonathan had come and had encouraged David, had strengthened his hand in the Lord, and how much, you know, that was an encouragement to David. That was his best friend. It's one of the best relationship examples that we have of friendship in the Bible is David and Jonathan. We see Jonathan seeking him out. That wasn't easy to do for Jonathan to find David. The guy is hiding out, yet he finds him, and he tries to strengthen his hand in the Lord. And we all read what he said. He told David almost the same thing every time he saw him. Thou wilt be the next king. You are going to be the next king of Israel, David. That's you. Reminding David of that. And of course, at this time, David's doing a whole lot better. And David's going to need that encouragement because of what's getting ready to take place in his life in the text that we just had. Now, by way of introduction for this sermon today, have you ever had one of those times in your life where you begin to wonder where God is? You know, where's the Lord in all of this? I know I've had those many times. And many times when you go back to them, you also have those moments that go with it when you're thinking back of wondering where God is, but all of a sudden He shows up. He shows up. And when you're able to look back at that, man, you can see the Lord's hand throughout. Well, that's exactly what we see happening here with David. The same thing that we see happening here. I know many times in my life where I've seen the Lord simply show up. You know, you've heard the different story before, but it certainly comes to mind right now when we are heading out on deputation and just beginning, not even out 1 week, and all of a sudden Daniel cuts his thumb, clean off, whoop, right through the joint capsule with a razor blade. That's hanging off. Go to the hospital. The motorhome gets ripped open when I hit the meter thing at the hospital, and that's tore up. And I was feeling absolutely miserable. I mean, my family's now living in this, in a less than 200 square foot motorhome at the time. That's ripped open. My son's thumb is off, and I'm not even 1 week on full-time deputation. And miserable, and wondering what in the world the Lord is doing. But of course, He showed up. He showed up. And I had to learn that lesson. Matter of fact, if you remember, I'd called Pastor Roach at that time, and I was really down, and he laughed on the phone. You had no idea how angry I was when he laughed, really. I was like, click. Click. Yeah, he was a blessing. He laughed on the phone, and there was nothing funny about the situation at all. But he did. But he made a great statement. He said, "The Lord is preparing you for New Guinea." And he was. That's exactly what was taking place. And, of course, you know the story. There ended up being a surgeon at another hospital that waited past midnight for us to show up. He explained to us the surgery that needed to be done. He said, "Well, let me just explore it now. And if I can find both tendons," he was worried about the tendon on this side mainly. "If I can find that quickly, I'll do the surgery tonight." And he did. He found it, did the surgery that night. We left, whatever it was, 2, 3 in the morning from the hospital. He was all bandaged up, ready to go. And then the missionary I was going to be preaching with that night in Winnipeg, he had a church of 20 to 25 people counting all children. That's everybody. That's it. Nobody else. And he saw my motorhome. I have to tell him about it. That was the first thing he said to me when I met him. He said, "Is that your motorhome?" He goes, "Oh." I said, "I know." And he said, "You're not going to believe this, though. I have a guy in my church that owns an RV body repair shop." And that morning, he just took sheet metal and ran it down the side of the thing and riveted it right back together. And everything was answered. We were on the road by noon the next day when I was just convinced it was over with. I'm going to be here for weeks. There's nothing to do. I don't have money to fix this. I never got charged one penny from the RV place. I still haven't paid Canada. I don't know if they're expecting a bill or not. I have no idea. So we'll cut this one off live stream now. We don't know. But you have those times when the Lord shows up. Even during our first term, the dollar, the value of the dollar had plummeted. We had a double whammy because the value of the kina, the PNG currency, had increased during that 4 years. So every single month, it was down and down. By the time the end of the 4 years, we lost the equivalent of 33% of our support. 33% was gone just because of the falling dollar. And yet every month, and we never had nothing set as far as what was set to come in. We needed substantially more than that just to be able to survive. And there was never a month that went by where extra did not come in during that first term when God would show up. He does that all the time. And that's what we see taking place in our text with David. Saul is after him. Obviously, the men of Ziph here have decided that they are going to... I think they're worried a little bit here. I'm going to defend them a little bit. They know what happened at Nob when Saul went in and just wiped out the priests. So surely if Saul would dare to do that, he would also wipe them out. Although I still don't... I'll discuss that probably more later. Their actions there in turning in David. But anyhow, they decide to send a group down to Saul to let him know, "Hey, listen, we'll deliver him into your hand. We know where he's at. We know what's taking place." And Saul hears it. And Saul has already been trying to catch David, and he can't do it. So Saul says, "All right, just go back. Find out all that you can. Where his movements are. Where he's usually hiding out. Is he going from what place to what place? And then as soon as you confirm all this, I'm heading that way." Well, anyhow, it appears from the text that Saul left pretty quickly, maybe even at the same time as this man. Maybe they already gave him information right away. "We've already done all this. We know exactly what he's doing. You need to come now." And so, anyhow, when Saul's army comes in, David had already moved about 5 miles further south. This is in the very south part of Judah where they're dealing. It's way down there. He moves 5 miles south of that location. But nonetheless, Saul figures out where he's at. And the Bible used some interesting terminology. It said he was in the rock. He was not actually in a rock. What it means is it was a cliff. He's actually on a cliff at this point where he finds himself. And even today, you can go to this place in Israel. You can see this valley with the cliffs up above on the side of this mountain. And that's where David and his men would have been. And Saul this time is using more wisdom than usual for him. And he decides to actually encompass David. The word does mean to surround him. And so he surrounds David now with his army. David is minutes away from capture. I have no doubt he can see the army coming. And he is, all this is getting ready to take place, but all of a sudden he's looking down, and the army turns and goes the other way. I mean, literally, this is one of the closest times that David was to death in his life, was here. And right when he's maybe thinking, what's getting ready to take place? The army's here. We're done for on a cliff. We're not going anywhere. This is it. They turn around and go back. It's almost like when we had earlier in our chapter, when David was again, you know, fleeing still from Saul. And we have those two words, but God. It's the same thing here. We see where God intervenes. And so tonight, what I want to do with this is draw some lessons out from this for help in the wilderness. When you're in those times in life and you're wondering, where's God in all of this? Where is He? Well, the fact is, He is simply right there. God at times, number one, allows us to go through situations that look desperate. All right? They're not because God is there. All right? He is there. When we truly know God, we're converted, we're His children, when we belong to Him, He is there and He is in control. But many times He still allows us to go through such situations that certainly do look desperate. And David certainly is in a horrible dilemma right now. Again, it's one of his closest calls with death that he has. He is completely surrounded by Saul's army while he's out on the cliff. It looks as if this is absolutely it. But again, the army turns around. There are times when God puts us in places where there's nowhere else to run. It looks like that's it. There's just nowhere else to run. At this point, David is following the will of God. He's not out of the will of God right now. Now he's acting like a king. This isn't corrective for David's character right now. David's right with God now. He's doing right. He's serving Him. And again, a lot of times we do have to examine ourselves because God sends, you know, trials in our life for different reasons. But David's right with God. Right now he's right in the middle of the will of God, yet he's still going through this very difficult situation. And again, many times God will take us through a wilderness. Battles will come as you serve the Lord. It does happen. I mean, if you look over in 2 Timothy, we won't turn there, but in 2 Timothy chapter 2, it says we're to endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. In other words, it being a soldier implies that there's going to be battles, that there's warfare that actually is involved. It doesn't compare somebody in the Air Force. If it had an airman, then there would be no battles whatsoever. There's not much to do in the Air Force. But it says, as a soldier, you endure hardness. Listen, it's not always easy to be a Christian. When you begin to make decisions in your life because this is what's simplest and this is what's easy, the majority of the time you're going to take yourself out of the will of God. We don't base decisions on whether it's difficult or easy. It doesn't mean you do that the opposite either. This is difficult, it must be the will of God. No, that's just as much insane. It's simply seeking God, what do you want, and not eliminating the direction that He might take you. And as Christians, though, more often than not, though, He does take us down a more difficult road. We are to endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. David was certainly learning this hardness by the lessons that he was going through. David even has those he did not expect, maybe those he even expected perhaps his help, turn out to help his enemy. The tribe who turned him in, they were of Judah. They're his own family. He's of the tribe of Judah. And they turned him in. So many times, sometimes it comes from a very unexpected source when it does take place. And so David had to endure that as well. Again, we also see here a major part of Saul's problem. Look over at verse 21. Look at verse 21. This is when the men came to him, and his response is interesting. And Saul said, "Blessed be you of the Lord, for you have compassion on me." Again, as I read that, as I sat down to prepare the sermon, the first time of the reading, this really wasn't even until Thursday. And I sat down and reading that, and I really just laughed when I got to that part. Really. The guy says, "Blessed be you of the Lord." This guy's so far from the will of God, yet he still uses this terminology as if he's right with God. Blessed be of the Lord. But notice, his sin is evident in the same breath. We see his problem. "For you have compassion on me." Saul was always obsessed with self. He was always obsessed with self. Usually when compassion is used, it's used when you're having compassion on others. Saul uses it in regards to self. Think of all the times when he was mad even at Jonathan or at others, his own army, because nobody was for him. He got obsessed with self. Remember when you heard all the singing taking place, when they were lifting up David's name and all this got started? He was obsessed with self. It led him down a wrong path. When you get obsessed with self, it'll always lead you down a wrong path. And that's what was taking place with King Saul. So Saul, again, he's after David. He is pursuing him. And anyhow, but it is during these times that you learn to depend upon God, simply because sometimes he has to put you in a place where there's nothing else you can do. You're either going to quit or you're going to depend upon God. It's one or the other. He puts you on that cliff. He puts you in that rock where you're being surrounded and there's just no way out. You can't figure this out on your own anymore. However, number two, we know that God sometimes allows us to go through situations that look desperate, just like he did with David. We have those times of wilderness in our life. But number two, God knows when to send help. He knows when to send help. He knows exactly when the help is needed. And David can see the army surrounding him. He's on this cliff. And it really does look as if this is it. He is surrounded. Think of that. I mean, they're breathing down. He is literally minutes away from capture and death. Saul will kill him immediately. And the army just turns around. The army just turns around. And think about this. Even though David was a man of war, a man of great strategy, God put him in a place where none of that would help him. None of that will help him now. He's surrounded. Again, many times the Lord puts us in a place where we can see no way out. Where we're no longer can depend upon our own reasoning to come through a situation. And I'm bad with it. My wife will ask you, I can sit down and think. I'll think of things for hours to try and wiggle my way out of it. I will. I can lay up all night. If I got an issue I'm dealing with, I will try and look at that thing from 40,000 different perspectives to try and find a solution to that thing. And then the Lord puts you in situations where it just doesn't help. You just can't see a way out. Then you know what you do? You wait for that messenger to show up. That's what you do. You wait for that messenger to show up. So many times the Lord will put us in situations where we can see no way out. We can no longer depend upon our reasoning. Again, the Lord wants us in a place where we learn to submit to Him and not to trust in our own wisdom. Really, that takes a major shift in our thinking in order for that to take place. That's not an easy transition to go through. To try and leave off when we're so used to solving everything by our own reasoning. Yet the Lord knows we are thinking through things in this life through this sin-cursed body and mind. He knows He has to be able to get you to a place to where your thinking is more dependent upon God and less on self. And that's what He's doing to David. And that's what He does to us. Again, David's in this horrible situation, but then he sees the army retreating. That day comes. It really does. It does come, and all of a sudden, if you're going to trust God and seek Him and not quit, and all of a sudden you think it's over with, I have no choice but to quit. But if you'll just wait on God, He knows when to help. And know what will happen? You'll see the army retreating. You'll see the army retreating. You trust in Him. Of course, in the text, the messenger had come to Saul and told him the Philistines had invaded, and so he had to turn the army around. And we know whatever that it had to be significant. I mean, let's face it, they already invaded Judah one time already, and Saul could care less. He was still too worried about finding David. David was the one who went and delivered him from the Philistines. That's how we started this chapter out. So it's probably somewhere significant that took place here. And anyhow, look over in Psalm 54. David wrote Psalm 54 when he was thinking about what took place in the verses we just read. Is that somebody snoring? That's pretty good. I'm very good at putting people to sleep. Psalm 54. Again, this is David writing with what just took place in the verses we read, thinking back about it when God delivered him, when he saw this army who was getting ready to pounce on him. And know what I think was going through his mind? The Bible doesn't say this. This person, know what I think was going through his mind? The last conversation he had with Jonathan right before all this got started. You're going to be the next king. You're going to be the next king. And then the army turns around. Anyhow, Psalm 54. Save me, O God, by thy name, and judge me by thy strength. Hear my prayer, O God. Give ear to the words of my mouth. For strangers are risen up against me, and oppressors seek after my soul. They have not set God before them. Behold, God is mine helper. The Lord is with them that uphold my soul. He shall reward evil unto mine enemies. Cut them off in thy truth. I will freely sacrifice unto thee. I will praise thy name, O Lord, for it is good. For he hath delivered me out of all trouble. And mine eye hath seen his desire upon mine enemies. Now the verse I want to draw your attention to that grabbed me in this is verse 4. Behold. And that's the behold. That's what he's saying. Get this, he says. Behold. God is mine helper. The Lord is with them that uphold my soul. Interesting. I mean, that's what he's learning right there. When it looks like there's just no way out of this. I cannot get out of this. This is it. What he learned was this. God is my helper. Even if it looks completely hopeless to me. There's nothing, nothing that is outside of God's control. And he watched that take place. He watched it take place. What he learned was that God is his helper. There's so many times in our life that the Lord has to teach us that. That the Lord is our helper. Now I'm going to read this right here. Marion doesn't know I did this. This I had Marion write down back when we were in the field. This is from the first term in our field. And this was, I had her do a blog post from my blog, The Missionary Insights. And I had her do a post. And this was the first time, or at this time, or just about a month without any water. And so I had to write this down, and I'm going to read through this. It says, when Terry asked me to write another entry for his blog, I really didn't know what to write about. Our life in PNG seems to never have a dull moment. Compared to life in America, most every aspect of the culture is completely different. To many of the village-dwelling nationals, we are considered rich, not because we are rich, but because we live in a house made of wood with tin roof and a cement foundation. We buy most of our food instead of growing it and eating the same thing every day. We have indoor plumbing and a generator to give us electricity to run our computer, water pump, refrigerator, and freezer. And we own a truck, and we can fill it with gas and have it repaired, which we need to do quite often. We even have it repaired with super glue and duct tape. And when you look under the hood, there is inner tubing tying together just about every part you can see. That was true. We used inner tube for everything to hold stuff together. I decided I'd write about what it's like when we have to do things the hard way. There's a joke among many of our missionary friends here in PNG we tease each other about whether we are real missionaries or not. If we have some kind of convenience that offers us some comfort or rest, then you are not being a real missionary. If we have to do without something or have it tough, then you are the real missionary. We have been real missionaries for a few weeks now. And that's a joke, by the way, that's in there. That's it. As for the indoor plumbing, our water is pumped into the house from two big tanks that are filled with rainwater. Our gutters are connected to the top of the tanks, and our rainwater is collected from our roof. A good rain for just 2 or 3 hours will fill both tanks. The only problem with this system is, well, when it doesn't rain, there's no water. No water in the tanks anyway. There's no water in the tanks anyway. There is water in the rivers and springs. We have heard that when your tanks run out of water here in Nemeth and I, that you have to go to the rivers and springs to get some. We always thought that would be tough, and I was always so glad when it would rain just as we thought we would run out of water. Well, it finally happened. We ran out of water. I thought it wasn't a big problem. I thought it wasn't a big problem, though, because we would pray for rain and ask others to pray for rain, and it would rain. That was 3 weeks ago. So we have been going to a spring-fed river about 1 mile from our house every day to fill up our liter jugs with water from the spring. Daniel, my 15-year-old son, has this job. We girls also wash our lawn hair at Howley's, that's the river, and the baby gets to play, baby Levi. I want your friends like that, Levi, wherever he's at. Where's baby Levi? There's baby Levi. He was just a few months old when this happened. Where am I at now? 15-year-old... Yeah, the baby gets to play. I do the laundry in two large tin tubs every other day. I fill them up with soap and water and put the clothes in to soak. Then we all rinse the clothes one at a time. wring them out, throw them in the basket. This gets repeated 6 times. Then she says, oh, my aching back. Normally my children do the laundry in our semi-automatic washer when we have water, and I hang them up. It's been annoying, but the Lord always gives me what I need or help me to grow. And this has been one of those times. First of all, it has allowed me to focus on my prayer life. This time when I prayed, there was no rain after a few days. Why not? What's wrong? I'm confident that it'll rain, and the Lord knows what He is doing in our lives. So I also know that my prayer life needs to be much, much better. This is really not an emergency situation. We can get water anytime we want from the river. Will my prayer life be good enough? And then she goes in the parentheses here. Good enough sounds as if it will be where it should be. Maybe I should say better enough. When things really get difficult, this is really not an emergency situation. We can get water anytime we want from the river. Will my prayer life be good enough when things really get difficult? To make that a sentence make sense. I really need to work on that. Having no water has been good for the children, too. Normally, they don't have to work that hard. Their chores are easy. They also have been praying for rain. I think it's wonderful when we are pulling together to pray for our needs here on the mission field. It has been good for all of us, especially baby Levi. There you go, bud. He loves playing in the water. I just received some heating pads for my back in a package from the U.S., and I'm off to try them out. Now, what I like about that is the very last part. That's what meant a lot to me when we were there. Nobody knew what we were, going through at that time without the water or anything like that. And yet a box shows up with heating pads for a back. Right there. You can see how the Lord will use different things in your life. Even though you're praying at the time, you could have went out there. I mean, usually that was the first time without water. Usually we'd pray, we'd have it. We never had to go without water before. But this time we prayed and it didn't work. And it still wasn't working 3 weeks later. We still think we went one more week. Is that right? Went 4 weeks that time? I think we went 4 or 5 weeks that time before it rained again. And all it takes is one rain. All we need is one rain. Those tanks are filled up. It pours there. That's all you need. But what you begin to figure out is the Lord is your helper. He's there. At different times, sometimes it's our perspective that needs to adjust at the situation. Because the problem is, I'm thankful that David was right with God when this happened. I'm thankful that he didn't make some crazy decision when the enemy was encompassing around him. He was waiting on God. He was waiting on, not knowing what the Lord was going to do, not seeing a way out, but he was learning, the Lord is my helper. He's going to be with those that uphold my soul. And he watched an army just simply turn around. It just simply turned around. Incredible. Oh, I put my sermon up. I guess we're done now. Let me get that back out. So anyhow, understand this. God is not sleeping. God has not forgotten about you. Again, as we talked with in the book of James, as we went through this, when we're dealing with trials, Romans 8:28 absolutely is true. Now, number three, God's invisible hand is always working behind the scenes. It always is. Think of all that had to happen in order for David to be delivered at that exact moment. And it was a lesson that the Lord was teaching David. It wasn't that God was late or he woke up and said, oh man, I forgot about David. No, it's exactly the lesson he wanted David to learn. He was letting that enemy breathe down his back where David was really getting the point. There's nothing else he can do of his own reason to change this. If God doesn't do something, it's over with. The Lord put everything together. The Philistines had to attack at just the right moment. A messenger had to be dispatched to find the king at just the right moment. Someone at the palace had to know where the king was. Someone had to be able to tell the messenger to get precise directions to find King Saul. The messenger has to arrive just before David is about to be captured. In other words, what you see is God's hand throughout. Now, I assure you, when David was on that cliff, I think it had been easy to question God's presence. Where's God? Just because you can't see him, you can't touch him, you can't smell him, and you can't feel him, doesn't mean he's not there. He was working the entire time. that never ended. Just because you don't see God or feel God doesn't mean He's not there. He absolutely is working. Now, two more things here, sub-points under this one, just to briefly mention and we'll go home. When you are tempted, what we learn from David is this. When you're in these trials or in that time of the wilderness and you're at that time, where is God in this? Don't panic. All right? Don't panic. People make bad decisions when they panic. Don't panic. Just trust the Lord. They say that's easier said than done. I agree with that. I think it is easier said than done. But don't allow a nice phrase like that to excuse you to be able to panic. All right? It's a matter of simply, we are His. Don't panic. You know, when you begin to panic, it wasn't Brother McDonald. Who was just telling me? Oh, it was John Penix, I think, was telling me this story. You were snorkeling off of Japan. I think you told me that story. And the guy, was that you, started drowning? And one of his friends started drowning. And what we did, he almost drowned two people because he was panicking all of a sudden, and he grabbed a hold of John. And he's getting ready to kill them both. Why? He was panicking. He was panicking. And to where John had to, you know, break him off and sneak up around the guy and grab him by the neck and drag him back. When you panic, you usually make wrong decisions. So when you're in that time of the wilderness, don't panic. All right? Had David panicked on that cliff, I'd hate to see what could happen. Lastly, when your circumstances are just overwhelmingly confusing to you, just overwhelmingly confusing, just simply know God is in control. Know He's in control. All right? You don't have to understand it right now. You just simply trust God. Listen, if we would actually believe that He has our best interest in mind, it helps us deal with whatever it is that we're going through. Again, if remembers are going through James, I'd said it several times how when we have different trials and these struggles in our life, we have to understand that it's a result of this sin-cursed earth. And God yet is still taking that horrible situation and He's still going to use it for our good. He's going to use it to strengthen us and to change us. David is learning how to be king. Not just any king, though. He's learning how to be a godly king. He's learning how to be a king after God's own heart. And you see some of the same traits in men leading up to David, and even going beyond David for that matter, of some of the same lessons being learned, of even God intervening and telling them straight out, like Joshua. Amazing stuff. When your circumstances are confusing, all right, what you have to trust in is that God's in control. You trust in Him. And you know what will happen? When the timing is right, a messenger will come. That army you think that's completely insurmountable and you can't get out of this, with simply a thought of God, it can retreat. And He is quite capable of orchestrating all the events to make that happen. So we have some help in the wilderness. We know that God does allow us to go through situations that look desperate. In other words, He takes us through those wilderness times. But God knows when to send help. And remember, God's hand, His invisible hand, is always working behind the scenes. With heads bowed and eyes closed.